Biden might not be the Democratic nominee. There are a few possibilities that we will be unraveling and discussing today. Also, if he is the nominee and it's Trump versus Biden versus RFK, who is actually the most pro-life candidate? That question is not as easy to answer as you might think. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Good Ranchers. Go to goodranchers.com. Use code Allie at checkout. That's goodranchers.com. Code Allie. Kristen, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. I'm so glad to have you on, finally.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on a show that you actually listen to. So this is great.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, we've got so much to talk about and cover today, of course, much life/abortion related. But we had been messaging a few months ago about something that you've said, which is that Biden might not actually be the Democratic nominee. Now, he did just reach the delegate threshold for the 2024 Democratic nomination. But like, what do you think is going on here? And what are some possibilities?
Yeah, well, I think when you look at, you know, Gavin Newsom's tour of America, and the billboards he's sponsoring with scripture verses in the South to promote abortion and telling folks to come to his state to get a taxpayer funded abortion, it's very clear he's no longer just setting his sights on destroying California. It's more nationwide now. And I mean, it's anyone who tuned into the State of the Union with President Biden. I was on the plane and I felt a little bad for the person sitting next to me, but it was very clear that, you know, he was real amped up for the first 15, 20 minutes. And then just slowly he began to fade. And as someone who's, you know, had grandparents who've gone through this phase in life, it's you start to see some signs here of that all isn't well. And I don't think anyone, certainly in the millennial or Gen Z generation, agrees. Most folks would agree that there's something not right there. And so what we've started really wondering is, what's the play here? What is the Democrats' actual plan for winning in November? Most people don't realize this, but the Democratic National Committee has some pretty obscure convention rules about what would happen in the event that the party's nominee for president or vice president would die, suffer from a disability, or even resign. I'll read this quote. The national chairman of the Democratic National Committee shall confer with the Democratic leadership of the United States Congress, and the Democratic Governors Association shall report to the DNC, which is authorized to fill the vacancy or vacancies. It's right there that Joe Biden could secure the nomination, receive the nomination at the convention, and then choose to resign immediately after the convention. And the leadership of the Democratic Party would be able to nominate who's running for president of the United States.
Okay. How likely do you think that is, just in your own personal assessment?
I don't know. I'm more of like a 50-50 type of gal. I'm kind of conservative when it comes to my bets, but I would say it's just knowing what we know from President Biden, all the slip-ups we've seen this year, the moves that we've seen Governor Newsom to make, I would say it's, you know, there's certainly angling going on behind the scenes, just no matter what Gavin Newsom says in the media.
So you think that that is their play? I don't think it's going to be Michelle Obama. I actually really think she does not want to be in politics. I'm not sure about Kamala Harris. So you think that their play might be to set up someone like Gavin Newsom, or at least they're testing him out to see how that'll go.
Absolutely. I mean, you've got Gavin Newsom, you know, he's, you know, coming, I'm in Florida right now, so he's coming to Florida doing events. Why is Gavin Newsom coming to Florida to host events? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Especially when DeSantis is not even running anymore. It'd be one thing if you thought, okay, he's just trying to make DeSantis look bad because DeSantis is running for president, but DeSantis isn't even in the race. So why would he be doing that?
No, and other names that have come up, you know, you think about the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer. She's like the abortion governor who gleefully deleted out all the funding for any pregnancy centers and all limits for abortion in her state, and has been leading the charge. You have the Illinois governor, J.B. Pritzker, who's using his own fortune to launch a pro-abortion nonprofit to go to war against the red states. So there, I mean, it may not just be Gavin Newsom. There are certainly quite a few abortion ideologues who are, I think, angling for this role.
Right. So you guys wrote an article, Students for Life wrote an article a few months ago talking about this, about the four ways that the Democrat Party could replace Biden, which, as you said, just watching him at the State of the Union, it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't want to do that, no matter what they say. I know, of course, right now they have to say he's so awesome, he's great, he's so accomplished and so with it. But I think we all know what's going on probably behind closed doors. Yeah. They are at least talking about, what if he doesn't make it? What if he is totally incapacitated? So one option that you guys gave was that he would lose the primary. At this point, we know that he has won the primary. He's got enough delegates. But the second is that at the convention, delegates who ran on a pledge to support the president don't. And you included Fox News's analysis of the DNC rules. Delegates are awarded to candidates during primaries throughout the first half of the year, but they won't elect a candidate for president until they vote during that convention. Under Democrat Party rules, pledged delegates are not required to vote for the candidate they represent, but are told to reflect the sentiments of those who elected them. So an endorsement from Biden would be very influential. That's a possibility.
Yes, it's absolutely a possibility. That would be fast. It would happen fast. It'd happen at the convention. They go into the convention. The delegates wouldn't give their vote to President Biden. Something would be maneuvering on the floor. And then you come out of the DNC convention this summer with a totally new candidate for president on the Democratic ticket. The Joe Biden resigning after the nomination is also, I think that's a pretty big possibility as well. And then you also have the fourth option where President Biden just drops out, and Vice President Kamala Harris, who is the abortion advocate for the Biden administration. She becomes the candidate for president. I think that's probably the least likely to happen out of those three remaining options, given her unpopularity with the American people, folks on both sides. So I definitely think it's something with the convention or after the convention where he would resign and the party would get to choose his replacement.
Wow. Well, I think one thing that we know is that this is going to be probably the craziest election of our lifetimes. There's just so much that cannot be predicted. When you look at Trump's legal troubles and when you look at Biden's mental troubles, we've got two candidates that are on very shaky ground, just as far as like their ability run. We can't even think about their ability to lead the country. Like, can you even make it to the election?
Yeah, it's hard as someone who's out there, with our 1500 Students for Life groups, we're recruiting volunteers to go door knocking and work in elections because, the abortion issue is not a political issue. However, politics is a very important part of one of the areas we play, just like service and support. And it's very difficult because you're having these conversations. And so really what you'll see pro-lifers talking about, most of the time now really isn't the race for president. It's going to be the U.S. Senate campaigns because when you think about all of the rulings that have come out and the Democrats' very clear goals, and then pledges they've made to their party-based voters, they want to reshape the judiciary. They want to stack the Supreme Court. And so when you think about who is the entity, who are the people that will be able to stop that, that's the U.S. Senate. We're very focused at Students for Life Action at the state legislative level of winning races and ensuring solid pro-life champions. I do not care if a candidate has an R beside their name. I wanted to see them have a PL beside their name, pro-life. And so, we've already been engaging in the primary process knocking on doors, making sure voters and constituents understand that some of these candidates, even in the red states that have pledged to be pro-life, aren't really acting like it when they get to the state capitol, and replacing them with 100% solid pro-life conservative legislators at their state capitol, because that's where we're seeing, you know, a lot of this momentum.
All right, quick pause to tell you about our first sponsor for the day, and that is Carly Jean Los Angeles. I am wearing Carly Jean Los Angeles right now, my cute sweater and my cute jeans. I'm always wearing CJLA. It's my favorite place to get clothes because I truly feel great in everything I wear from there. It's super flattering. You can mix and match it. You can get just a capsule wardrobe, so just a few pieces that you can mix and match, and it offers you a lot of versatility without having to spend a ton of money on clothes. But when you do spend money there, you can feel good about it because this is a company that's run by a family that loves the Lord. They have the same values that you and I do. They're great, real salt of the earth people, and they just have a passion for making women feel good in their skin by selling awesome clothes. Go to CarlyJeanLosAngeles.com. Use code RELATABLE. When you do, you'll get 20% off your order. That's a great deal. CarlyJeanLosAngeles.com, code RELATABLE. Have you noticed in your dealing with the politicians who are running for office that they are scared of the abortion issue more so than they have been in the past, because this has become even more polarized since the overturning of Roe v. Wade? What have you seen when it comes to Republicans and how they approach abortion?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have some Republicans who've been scared since the day the Dobbs decision was came out, right? That we all kind of knew that some of these leaders who came to the pro-life banquets and gladly accepted the endorsements and campaign dollars from pro-life entities really weren't on our side. And we knew that because we had gone in and we'd asked them to sponsor legislation or lead on a legislative effort. And it was always like, well, not right now, not at this moment. And so you had a lot of politicians who were scared very quickly in the Republican Party that they were going to be required to actually do something. And so we've definitely seen, Allie, a lot of hesitation from these some of these Republican leaders who really weren't, I would say, well-formed in the issue of abortion, about Planned Parenthood, the violence that goes on in Planned Parenthood, the corruption that goes on inside of Planned Parenthood. So they had to do a lot of catch up very quickly. That's why you've seen some, you know, missteps with language folks have used when they've been on the hot seat in an interview, asked a question and didn't really know how to respond because they had really never thought through that question. I had an 8-page like memo I was schlepping around to Washington, D.C. about a month and a half before the Dobbs decision came down with the talking points for Republican leaders. Like, this is how we respond. These are the resources we give. This is all that the pro-life movement does to support women and families in crisis. But sadly, some of them did not get the memo. And so, yeah, this is definitely an uphill battle that we're facing. And I'd like to be able to say, on our political arm, Students for Life Action, I'd love to be able to say I spend my time fighting Democrats every day and pro-abortion candidates, but that's not the case. I spend the majority of our time actually engaging with Republicans to force Republicans to uphold the platform of our party and to remind them of their pro-life promises. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm the most popular person in Washington, D.C. when folks discover that we're engaging in Republican primaries and holding these people's feet to the fire for the promises they've made. And it's something to think about, like, this generation who aren't, and this is, you know, the conversation I try to have with the older folks, is this generation of pro-life leaders, this pro-life generation, we're not party advocates. We are not Republican first. We are Christian first. We're Americans. We're pro-lifers. The label of the party is so far down the list of priorities. And I think the older generation of political leaders has a hard time thinking of that. They think that, well, if I have an R beside my name, everyone's going to come alongside of me and support me. And that's not the case. We want leaders who are pro-life first.
Yeah. What do you make of the candidates' abortion positions right now? I mean, when you look at Trump, who is, if you look at Trump, RFK, Biden, Trump, I guess, is the most pro-life in that he helped nominate and place the SCOTUS picks that ended up helping the overturning of Roe v. Wade. He went to the March for Life. I think he would call himself pro-life, but I actually posted on my Instagram stories when I was comparing him and RFK the other day when I said, you know, well, Trump is pro-choice. I got so many messages saying, what are you talking about? Trump is not pro-choice. He's so pro-life. Well, I'm not so sure about that, just based on the things that he said. And actually, before I get your commentary on it, I've got a thought. So I'll just... if we can do SOT 2.5 on the federal abortion ban.
If a federal ban landed on your desk, if you were reelected, would you sign it at 15 weeks?
Are you talking about a complete ban?
A ban at 15 weeks.
Well, people are starting to think of 15 weeks. That seems to be a number that people are talking about right now.
Would you sign that?
I would sit down with both sides and I'd negotiate something. And we'll end up with peace on that issue for the first time in 52 years. I'm not going to say I would or I wouldn't. I mean, DeSantis is willing to sign a 5-week and 6-week ban.
Would you support that?
I think what he did is a terrible thing and a terrible mistake.
Okay, heartbeat bills, terrible thing, terrible mistake, but maybe 15 weeks well into the second trimester. What's your take?
Well, I think it's a completely naive statement to say that President Trump, the deal maker, is going to sit down with Planned Parenthood, who literally profits off the despair of women and profits off of selling her an abortion instead of actually, I don't know, helping her and empowering her, telling her they profit off of telling her she can't be a mother and complete her education or achieve her career goals. That he's going to sit down with Planned Parenthood and then me. And other female, you know, the pro-life leaders, we tend to be, I don't know why we're all women right now. And we're all going to come to some sort of conclusion that everyone's going to be happy and there's going to be peace on this issue. There will never be peace on the abortion issue until abortion is ended. I mean, that is what's so unique about the American pro-life movement. When you compare our movement to, you know, my friends in Europe who are leading pro-life movements, where in Europe, sadly, thanks to these, you know, compromises of like 15-week, 12-week bans on abortion prevention acts, you know, peace was declared in these countries that, you know, it's no longer a contentious issue. We've moderated abortion. It's over. And it's made it incredibly difficult for the pro-lifers in these other countries to continue to beat the drum that abortion is in a grave moral, you know, evil and should be ended. And I think that, you know, that's one of my concerns I have about presenting a national, you know, piece of legislation to prevent abortions at 15 or 16 weeks that will save maybe 4% of children. But the, you know, and I'm always in favor of saving as many kids as possible. Absolutely. I don't believe in throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But I do think we have to be careful of not saying we're going to present this consensus solution of 15 weeks, and then the issue is going to be over, because I'm thinking long term about the long term success of our movement, not just 2024, but 2034, 2044, as the pro-life generation rises up to abolish this evil. And so that was an incredibly naive statement to say. You know, what I have asked of the Trump campaign in my conversations is honestly, the president doesn't need to be speaking about abortion right now. He needs to be focusing on, he can focus on his record and highlight the differences between him and President Biden, who is 100% pro-abortion. You know, getting a prevention act to the president's desk was going to take a pro-life Senate. So I don't even think we're at that conversation yet. However, President Trump could speak into the things he likes to talk about the most. So things like, I don't know, taking out the swamp, the fact that we have 80-year-old grandmas sitting in jail for peacefully praying in from the abortion facility, awaiting a 10 to 11 year federal prison sentence. Or the fact that the FDA, using COVID as an excuse, stripped all of the safety regulations off of chemical abortion pills, RU486, Now women and or rapists can obtain these drugs who then cover up their crimes. And these drugs are not only killing her child, they're not only making her bathroom an abortion facility, but they're also leading to infertility. They're putting her life at risk. They have a 15% incompletion rate, meaning she is vulnerable to sepsis and infection because she's not seeing a doctor. If she's Rh negative, she may be never able to carry another child to term. These drugs are then entering our public waterways through these three active metabolites that are only found in RU486, which we know are known endocrine disruptors and harm animal and plant life. No one's talking about that. So, you know, President Trump could do a lot of good focusing on the things that as president, as the head of the executive branch, he could actually achieve rather than saying things like that, which, you know, the pro-life movement has not struggled for 51 years to get peace on abortion by allowing 93 to 94, 95% of abortions to continue. And that's not where we'll be okay.
Yeah. Wow. And you know, just like, you're so right, because PR 101, you do not have to answer the questions that are given to you in an interview. You can give whatever answer you want. If someone asks you, would you sign this? Would you sign that? Of course, I would have loved for him to answer differently and say, yay, absolutely, I love heartbeat bills. However, if you're not going to say that and just say, you know what I want to focus on? I'm worried about that grandmother who is rotting in prison right now because she was peacefully protesting. Can't we agree that that is wrong and that's what the Democrats stand for? You can always turn it around. You never have to answer the question that the interviewer gives you. But he very famously, I don't think... is trained. Like, he doesn't listen to publicists or media trainers. He needs you. He needs you to help him answer those questions.
He needs you, Allie Beth. We can go down the Mar-a-Lago together because it's very frustrating. You know, we're concerned about the 2024 election, of course, in the pro-life movement. I'm concerned about the presidency, the U.S. Senate, the House of Representatives, state legislative races. And we need the pro-life generation to rise up like never before to volunteer for, you know, candidates of all at all levels, because laws are a way that we save lives and we will move culture on this issue. It's not, like I said, it's not the only way, but it is a very important part of this movement. And to hear President Trump say, because even with that clip, you know, you pulled, I was thinking to myself, does he really think heartbeat laws, which we were so honored to, you know, push here in Florida, and I was like knocking on doors here in very nice Naples against the Republican leader to force that bill for a vote.
Yeah.
But does he really hate heartbeat laws, or was he just like in the mode of anything Ron DeSantis did, he was calling terrible?
Right.
Who knows? I don't know. I have no clue.
Okay, second sponsor for the day is 7 Weeks Coffee. 7 Weeks Coffee is a pro-life coffee company. They get their name from the size of a baby in the womb at 7 weeks gestation. It's the size of a coffee bean, so that's why they've named their company this. They take 10% of every sale, donate it to a pregnancy center or pro-life organization. These organizations and centers are saving lives by providing free resources to women who have unplanned pregnancies. They have raised over $325,000 for these pro-life centers and organizations across the country. Also, this is really high quality coffee. It is the most sustainably sourced, the most ethically grown. It is the highest quality coffee that you can get. It is awesome and it tastes really good. Plus, it can serve a higher purpose of literally saving babies' lives. Go to 7weekscoffee.com. Use code Allie for 10% off. 7weekscoffee.com, code Allie. No matter what, whether he thinks that is true or not, he is the most pro-life or the least pro-choice candidate that we've got on the table right now. Right. You know, I've got a lot of people in my audience who are considering voting for RFK. And these are pro-lifers, but they like his position on medical freedom. He's shown a lot of compassion towards moms whose kids have been vaccine injured. They like his stance against Fauci, and they look at Trump and they say, okay, well, he didn't drain the swamp. He should have fired Fauci. Mm-hmm. He should have fired Christopher Wray. And he, you know, pushed the vaccine, which a lot of people don't like. And then also they're looking at the abortion issue because these are pro-lifers saying this. And they're like, well, RFK is pro-choice, but Trump hasn't been as strong as we want to either. So RFK, he said in an interview that there should be restrictions after the first 3 months. But then actually his campaign manager said, no, that's not. Yeah, that's not what we believe. And so tell me, like, what's your take on that and looking at the like pro-life creds of Trump versus RFK?
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the Ronald Reagan adage of personnel policy. That is something you have to look at anytime you're electing an official, right? Because you have to see who are they going to appoint, who is going to be serving alongside of them, giving daily briefings. Mm-hmm. I could tell you right now, you're never going to vote. I mean, I don't foresee this happening in my lifetime. I'm never going to vote for a presidential candidate that I agree with fully. I have to be strategic in my vote. And I know I have to vote for the least amount of evil that is out there today. I don't know what RFK's full position on abortion. Maybe he is against abortion in a second, third trimester. That's awesome. In fact, I want to have a conversation with him ASAP about what we're finding in the water and chemical abortion pills, because I think that's a lot of common ground can be found there.
Right.
And I'd love to talk with him and his staff about that. However, the fact that his staff walked back that statement tells you who he has surrounded himself with.
Yes.
That also tells you who's going to be serving in his White House. Mm-hmm. If you even think first of all, he doesn't have a chance of winning. But if you think he has a chance, you want to make an argument with me that RFK has a chance of winning the presidency in our two-party system, okay, then ask yourself, who is going to surround him? Who's he going to appoint to be Secretary of Health and Human Services? Right now at the Department of Health and Human Services, we have a lawyer, not a doctor, who's an abortion activist, who sued Catholic nuns in California to force Catholic nuns to put birth control, hormonal birth control, and abortion into their insurance plan. That's the man, Javier Becerra, who's leading our Department of Health and Human Services, an abortion activist. Who do we think RFK is going to appoint to lead HHS, who will then appoint the FDA commissioner and the NIH commissioner? I mean, that's what you have to ask yourself. I mean, one of the challenges that the Trump administration and many people in the Trump administration came out to say after their first 4 years was the biggest challenge President Trump had of being elected president and being a DC outsider was they had a very hard time figuring out how DC worked and the people they needed to hire. That was one of the key roles of Vice President Pence, who had been in DC and knew the folks that had been leading these efforts in previous administrations, who could jump right back in to quickly undo the 8 years of evil from Barack Obama's presidential administration. Who's RFK going to appoint?
Yeah. Yep. That's my question, too, when it comes to Supreme Court justices, when it comes to all the things that you talked about, who is in RFK's orbit? Like, to your point, his spokesperson, when she was asked, okay, wait, does he support a federal abortion ban? Because at first he was like, oh, yeah, sure, 15 weeks sounds good. And she said, the spokesperson said, Mr. Kennedy supports a woman's right to choose, and then goes on to say that, you know what, he thinks that the issue of late-term abortion, it's just being used to gin up controversy, and it's disturbing that that happens. But even then, she's saying that's a woman's right to choose. So what she is saying in so many words is that Kennedy's position is that it is a woman's choice through all 9 months of pregnancy. Now, whether or not he believes that personally is almost irrelevant. At the end of the day, it matters who he puts in charge. He might not really want to say or believe that himself. I'm sure he was raised Catholic, and so he probably does have some qualms with that. However, if that is what he is running on, and that's what the people who are around him believe, that is going to manifest itself in policy. And look, he can be a great advocate against the predation of big pharma. 100% something to be said for that. I appreciate that. does he believe babies in the womb have a right to life? I don't really see evidence that he does or would enact policies that represent that.
That's exactly right. And I think you just have to ask yourself, who does he surround himself with? Even with the challenges we've had with some of the things Donald Trump has said recently that we've been very disappointed by, I can tell you with 100% certainty, the folks that I've been speaking with inside the Trump campaign, when I call to complain, Alibeth, are pro-life. You know, the people that are working on the campaign, they already know what I'm going to say before I'm on the phone complaining to them about some statement that's been said in some media interview. And that, to me, gives me at least some reassurance that the, you know, we said in 2016 when we were trying to evaluate who does the pro-life generation support and who the pro-life generation should support after Donald Trump secured the nomination. You know, my statement to our student leaders was very clear that actions speak louder than words. And Donald Trump's actions during the 4 years of his presidency are speaking louder than some misstatements that he's made in the past year. He has been a solid, and he was a solid pro-life president when you look at the judges that overturned Roe versus Wade, the federal judges that he appointed, the leaders at HHS, and throughout all of his administration. And I actually think Vice President Pence actually is one to thank for that. But that's key and that's clutch when you're trying to make these strategic decisions. Because once again, you're not going to, as a Christian, I don't think we're ever going to vote for somebody who is 100% aligned with our values and votes with a Christian worldview all the time. I think the best we can do in this present situation and the world we live in is to make a strategic decision with our vote, not throwing away that vote and making sure our vote can be used for the most amount of good. And if our votes can be used to get Joe Biden and the Democrats out of the White House to stop the vicious promotion of chemical abortion pills and abortion across our country. I mean, the Vice President of the United States just visited a mega Planned Parenthood abortion facility in Minneapolis. This has never happened before in the history of our country. They are trying. Mm-hmm. They have a full-on campaign to normalize killing babies for profit.
Yep.
Killing human children for profit. So, yeah, I mean, think about the State of the Union and even the comments that were made in the State of the Union where President Biden started talking about how Republicans in Alabama are evil. There was babies in test tubes that mothers weren't able to implant. And that was evil because we like babies. And in the next breath, he championed Kate Cox, mm-hmm. who went across state lines and aborted her child because her child's chromosomes weren't perfect in her mind. And she didn't want to be bothered having a child with trisomy 18, who literally practiced eugenics. They were, you know, that was like the whiplash was crazy. We needed to wear a neck brace during the State of the Union.
Yeah. No, it really is eugenics. People don't see it like that. And it's actually amazing. Right. I know we don't have time. I've got to let you go. But when I talk about things like Kate Cox, how they really, a lot of people, even some people who call themselves pro-life, think that the Democrats actually have the more reasonable and compassionate position on that. It's like, oh, yeah, in this one case, when it comes to a child who has a disability, all of a sudden we have to believe that child doesn't have a right not to be murdered. That makes me think that people don't really understand the pro-life position at all.
No, in fact, they don't. So I'll prove it to you. So immediately after the Alabama decision came down, I started speaking out about my concerns with in vitro fertilization, one from a Christian and moral perspective, and two as a mother, because I have two children with cystic fibrosis. 90% of children with cystic fibrosis who are diagnosed in utero are aborted. PGD, prenatal genetic determination, is used in IVF clinics every single day with couples who have been determined to be recessive carriers for cystic fibrosis. Why? Because they eliminate children who have cystic fibrosis. We practice eugenics saying that there's something wrong with my children and they shouldn't have been born and they'd be better off being thrown away or their bodies as embryonic humans donated to science to be killed. It's absolutely sick, that mentality. But we started running. I wanted to know, Alibeth, because, you know, you saw those quotes in the media after the Alabama decision of so-and-so pro-lifer says they're pro-IVF. So we ran a little mind change experiment online. I do this with Planned Parenthood. I do this with abortion with our digital field team. And so we targeted pro-lifers in one test and mushy middle, movable middle pro-choice folks in the other test. And normally I'll tell you when we run these tests, it costs me about $4.24 to change someone's minds on Planned Parenthood, about the same to change a person's mind on abortion. I never run the test on pro-lifers because I know they stand. But this time I did pro-lifers and mushy middle demographic. And it was a quiz. And the question was, do you support IVF? Take this quiz, tell us how much you know. And at the end of the quiz, we asked the same question. Do you support IVF? And the quiz is four questions, true or false, 88% conversion rate. Cost me 36 cents per minds changed of pro-lifers and the mushy middle pro-choice on the issue of IVF. And it's an 88 and 86% minds changed rate, meaning no one actually knows what happens in IVF clinics. Yeah. Americans broadly say, I support IVF, but have no idea of the wild, wild west that goes on. And when you do a four question, true or false quiz, 36 cents to change a mind on IVF, that tells you no one really knows. And you have Republican leaders who've tripped over themselves to try to overcorrect this Alabama Supreme Court ruling with no regard for the parents who lost children. And they themselves, I can guarantee you, don't know what happens inside of an IVF clinic.
Oh my gosh. Yes. There's so much that we could say here. That whole Alabama thing is being framed wrongly. When it was the parents of the children who were destroyed, who sued, it wasn't anti-IVF activists. It was these parents saying, these were my children. We want someone to be held liable under the Harm to a Minor Act in Alabama. All right, if there's one thing that we can predict this year, it's that we can't predict anything. We can predict the unpredictable. That is true when it comes to the financial world. And that's why you need to make sure that your savings are protected. You can do that through Birch Gold. If you don't know what I mean when I say you should consider converting your 401k or IRA into precious metals, then you just need a free info kit from Birch Gold. People absolutely love working with them. And this info kit that they offer is no obligation. You just get to learn more about it and see if it's right for you. You just text 989-898, text Allie to 989-898 for that free info kit. They'll tell you all about it. Text Allie to 989-898. You're absolutely right. This is actually something that only I have started thinking about in the last 5 years. And it is probably after abortion, probably the number one thing that people tell me, wow, I didn't know. And now my mind has changed when it comes to IVF and surrogacy. People really, they never thought about it. They've just never thought about it. And they want to be happy for people who have struggled with infertility and have babies. Yeah. And so unfortunately, a lot of pro-lifers go through this, you know, any means necessary thought process of justifying IVF. But I hope that that's changing, although it does put us on even more controversial ground in the mainstream.
It does. And I think, you know, I'll tell you, I spoke to the New York Times after the decision came out, and I made a simple statement, you know, like, you know, I can't name one pro-life organization that's okay with this, right? I mean, everybody, even Protestant, Catholic, are united that there's something wrong with how IVF practice. Even if you support single embryo transfer and not, you know, putting children in cryogenic freezers, which 80% of them are never, you know, never are born. Even if you support, you know, making one human being and implanting one human being, there's something wrong with the industry. And you would not believe the text messages I got from friends for that statement, Allie. And it was sad because I was texting with these folks who I know are with me on this issue. But I know the anger that they felt was because they felt that my statements were going to mess up 2024. And so I think that's, we have to challenge ourselves, and I have to challenge myself as a pro-life, you know, leader, often of, am I making this decision? Am I saying this because I'm worried about this pending election, which I'm definitely worried about. I'm a mom of four children, two of whom have a severe genetic disability. I'm definitely worried about this election. But have I hurt our movement in 10 to 20 years? And now may not be the time strategically to engage on this issue and go to battle on this issue, but now is the time to have a reasonable conversation and start saying, this raises a lot of good points. Maybe let's start talking about it and let's not be afraid to speak truth. And I think that's where it gets hard as a Christian in the public sphere of we're called to speak truth. We're called to speak truth in love and with compassion. But when, you know, when we're directly asked, people want to answer. And, you know, I can't just ignore the question. We talked about ignoring the question. Because I could, yes, I can decline the interview and I can say, hey, I'm not going to talk about this issue or I'm not going to do that TV interview on this issue. But Students for Life leaders that are on nearly 1,500 campuses every day, they can't decline the interview. They're the ones having conversations every single day with their peers and they're changing minds. I mean, we're changing 10 to 18% of young people's minds on abortion through personal conversations every single day. And so I was really, I did a lot of, DMing of some of our student leaders, some of whom were conceived using IVF when this happened, checking on them and really wanting to know, what did they need from me? What did they need from the pro-life movement and to help them in these conversations? And all I heard was, keep talking, we need more information. And, you know, keep being out there. And that's why I love this generation of young people who are just leading this effort so courageously. I mean, they get spit on, they get discriminated in class, they get yelled at by their professors, called ignorant in front of other students. But they're always out there and they're always faithful to the mission that they know God's called them to.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Thank you to you and all the students who are really so brave in going into the lion's den, but also just how you persistently engage with Republicans to just make good on their promises. Everyone should be supporting Students for Life and going to your website for Students for Life, making your donation. That's how you guys exist. That's how you guys are able to change people's minds because of the donations and support of pro-lifers across the country. So thank you so much, Kristen. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on.
Thank you, Adabeth, and thanks for all that you do and the truth that you speak.
Thank you.
You'll never know the impact that you make, because I have conversations with legislators who are like, now, did you see this clip on YouTube with this young lady? I'm like, yes, absolutely, and she did, and she spoke truth. So thank you for being fearless.
Well, thank you so much, Kristen. Likewise. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. So good. Before we close out, I just want to remind you that there's the new installment of a Blaze original series called Texas versus the Feds that you guys have got to watch. It is absolutely mind-blowing what is actually happening on the southern border and how the federal government is standing in the way of Texas's efforts to try to secure the border and to protect its own people. What is going on? Who is behind this? What is the real motivation that the federal government has for basically opening up the border? You've got to check this out. If you go to blazeoriginals.com, use code Allie, you can sign up, get $30 off your subscription. You'll get access to this, my content that's behind the paywall too. It is well worth your money. All right, that's all we've got time for today. We will see you back here tomorrow.